You're about to listen to a Second City Works presentation, brought to you in partnership with WGN Radio. Subscribe on your favorite podcast streaming platform or listen on WGNradio.com. And be sure to share.
The Second City is a world-famous comedy theater, and it got so famous because it has produced generation after generation of comedy superstars. That didn't happen by magic. Second City's improvisational pedagogy fuels great performance, and the same practices that have made stars of everyone from Bill Murray to Tina Fey can be applied for success offstage, at work, at home, and in the world. I'm Kelly Leonard, Vice President of Creative Strategy, Innovation, and Business Development at the Second City. This podcast is about collaborative conversations, discovering connections, and building a better future. This is Getting to Yes And.
Welcome. My name is Kristen. I'm a senior programmer here at Chicago Humanities, and thank you all for coming out tonight. In their new book, The History of Sketch Comedy, our guests tonight, Keegan-Michael Key and L. Key, expand on their award-winning podcast, offering a deeper exploration of the world of sketch comedy with personal anecdotes and contributions from legends within the comedy world. In this book, they take readers on a humorous journey from the original Commedia dell'arte to the future of sketch comedy. One note on the event today, although Keegan and Elle will be discussing this incredible book, as we all know, their union is currently on strike, and according to SAG-AFTRA rules, unfortunately cannot promote past, present, or upcoming union projects. So while we may not be discussing specifics about some of our favorite shows today, tonight's conversation will give us all a little more time to dig into this incredible book. And if you haven't already, I encourage all of you to pick up your pre-signed copy of The History of Sketch Comedy at the Seminary Co-op table just outside this room. And before I introduce our speakers, I'd like to give special thanks to our presenting partners, the Robert R. McCormick Foundation, Builders Vision, and Freedman Properties, and our fall season sponsors, Abelson Taylor, Southwest Airlines, the City University of Chicago, and Wintrust. And we'd also like to express our gratitude to Elaine and Roger Haydock for their support of tonight's program, which is part of their long-standing humor series, shining a spotlight on some of the biggest names in comedy that grace the stage of Chicago Humanities. I'd also like to thank our home tonight, Francis W. Parker School, for their support of this program. And finally, I'd like to thank our members and donors whose support allows us to produce our ambitious spring and fall festivals. The generosity of our members accounts for the majority of our annual budget, so if you love what we do, please consider joining today. Membership is vital to our success, and you can join at the box office following this program or online at chicagohumanities.org. Leading our conversation tonight is Kelly Leonard, Vice President of Creative Strategy, Innovation, and Business Development at the Second City, with whom we're partnering on this event tonight. He has spoken at prestigious events like Aspen Ideas Festival and TEDx Broadway, and guest lectured at Stanford and the University of Chicago. With over two decades at Second City, he has collaborated with renowned talent, including Tina Fey, Stephen Colbert, Amy Poehler, Seth Meyers, and one of our guests tonight, Keegan-Michael Key. Please help me welcome Kelly Leonard.
Award-winning actor Keegan-Michael Key is known for his diverse talents in comedy and drama. He gained fame through multiple award-winning shows, Key and Peele, and has starred in Schmigadoon, The Prom, Reboot, and Wonka, with notable voice roles in Lion King, Toy Story 4, and more. Key has also showcased his skills on stage in productions like Hamlet and Meteor Shower, as well as his time as a cast member of a little theater called The Second City, both in Detroit and Chicago. They have co-written this fantastic new book, The History of Sketch Comedy, A Journey Through the Art and Craft of Humor. Please welcome Elle Key and Keegan-Michael Key.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good Chicago welcome, yeah.
Very exciting.
Hello, I'll start with you. I keep doing this myself, and I'm sure you're, because it's also not swivel on chairs.
It's so lovely.
It's like, oh, I'm not swiveling.
But they're not squeaking. If they're squeaking, I think, no, they're not squeaking. We're good. I think we're good. Well, we just want to make sure that people over there don't get the back of it.
Exactly. Sight lines. Hi, everybody over here. Hi, everybody over here.
Okay. We'll make sure if I go this way, you go that way, and we'll be good.
Okay.
Okay.
And I'll be in Scotland before ye.
You talk in the book about understanding an individual's comedic sensibility. You kind of just know where they're from, and often, like, what made their family laugh. So I'm curious with you, a little bit of where you're from, and where your comedy gene comes from.
Comedy gene, that's a great way to put it, because if we definitely have comedy genes in our family. So I grew up in and around New York City. Yay, yes. Thank you. Right. Mom, is that you, Mom? My mom is actually in New York right now. But we grew up in a house who happened to be Jewish and learned that culturally, so you got one Jew and one person in New York.
And one New Yorker.
All right. This is good. This is good. These jokes are going to go over great in this guy. So, both of my parents tell jokes, some one of them better than others. My aunts and uncles, grandparents, and like my grandfather always had like a limerick book around and silly things like that. And then when I was a kid, we were lucky enough to get up to the Catskills sometimes in the summer. And even when I was a kid, we'd sit in the back, one person from the Catskills, I'm kidding, keeping track. We would sit in the back of the theater, and I mean, Alan King and Robert Klein and all these amazing comedians would be there. And the audiences were really, really very excited and lots of laughing. And you go, what do you have to do that? How do you make people do that? And I've done many things in my life, but Keegan's done many things too, but comedy is definitely something that we have in common. And when we first met, we started talking about kind of the science of humor, like the math of how you break down a joke, or what makes a joke funny, or what the path is that has a turn, what's a good setup? A setup and a punchline. So what we call them like hard jokes, which is like with a traditional joke, as opposed to someone telling a funny story or doing a bit or sketch comedy, as these guys are proficient at. But like, what's a good hard joke? So when we met,
yeah.
You wanted, what?
No, go ahead.
No, I was saying that, so when we met, this was kind of one of the first conversations about, well, if we're going to work together, what do you think is funny? Like, what do you think is good? What kind of things do you want to, right? That makes sense. Like, what do we have, if we're going to be in a working relationship, what are the projects that you like? What are the TV shows that you like the joke ratio? Like, Modern Family, you could probably almost set your watch. It's like there's a joke every 90 seconds on Modern Family or some kind of silly bit that comes up. So, And then I also found out, and this is amazing for my friend over here, is he's never heard like any old Jewish jokes. Like,
I'm just a little black Catholic boy from Detroit, so.
Go Lions.
Oh my God! Now I wish you weren't here, because now I'm just going to be thinking about you all night. Go. He's wearing a Lions jersey.
So
I love it.
Is that about right? That's what we did?
What's that?
That was kind of our... I was going to say, that was kind of our first...
That was our first... Yeah, it was certainly at our first meeting that there was no... I did not understand... I had not heard any of these jokes, and so she was just on cloud nine. And the very first joke she told me, I laughed so hard, she couldn't believe... She was like, now, come on, give me a break. You've never heard any of these jokes, and... I just think, well, you know what? Tell them the joke. Do you guys want to hear the joke? Want to hear the joke?
Is that okay with you? Do you want the first joke?
The first joke you ever told me from our first meeting.
I actually do remember. The reason why I remember the first joke I ever told him is because sometimes we're in a room and King is like, you know that first joke you should tell that joke. So I know which one it is.
Yes. Okay. Sometimes we're in a room with 900 people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. There's no kids, right? A couple? Maybe a couple? No? Okay. It's not that bad. It's not that bad. I've told it in front of my mother. It's fine. There's a little kid, and if you know the answer, don't say that bad. The punchline
don't they
say
don't know the
they
joke.
Don't know. They don't okay. know. Okay. There's a little...
We've established there's only one Jew here.
They this don't, is a lot of...
They don't know
this
the joke.
This one's not Jewish. This is actually, it's a little more of an East Coast joke, but oh, it works in Chicago, I think. There's a little kid, and he's smoking, and an old guy comes up to him, and he says, "Kid, you know, you really shouldn't smoke. Like, I mean, it's really bad for you." And the kid says, "Well, my grandfather's 95 years old. The guy goes, "Wow, he's a smoker?" And he goes, "No, he minds his own fucking business." Thank you. Thank you very much. Swivel away, yes.
So I know there's a gap of lines because the lyrics are fun tonight. And, you know.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's a welcome
distraction. Go Lions, go Lions.
But this is, you know, I met you there, and I'm curious, like, Detroit, in terms of your comedy genes, because you also perform in Chicago, and that is, you know, it's different.
So. Yeah, it's very different. The one thing that I found in Detroit, especially at the Second City, that was fascinating, was that we had no tourist base.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that was kind of yes.
You may laugh at that, Chicago. Yes, yes.
So when we did, at the Second City in Chicago, sometimes they'll do one show or maybe two shows a year because of all the tourism that comes into the city. In Detroit, we did 3 to 4 shows a year because we had the same audience coming over and over and over again. But,
he doesn't mean, like, they only performed once for 4 months and they didn't perform again. He means the same material, right?
That yes, the same material.
Okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't like you did 3 shows in a year.
Right, we would perform the same. No, yes, we didn't just do one show.
It was that dangerous to get to the theater.
Sweet gig, yeah. Sweet gig. Yeah. One show every 3 months, boom, then we're out.
Yeah.
But the humor in Detroit was always very kind of very raw and physical, and that's what I remember the most about the difference, kind of the big difference between the Second City Chicago and the Second City Detroit, is that the humor here would be both physical and very heady. It could be one or the other, whereas in Detroit it was always I felt like I was losing about 3 pounds a night doing shows there. It was like a James Brown concert, you know what I mean? And so we. When I came to Chicago, there was a little bit of an adjustment to make.
Yeah. One of the things I love in the book, so there's history, but there's also comedy philosophy. And you talk about the fact that laughter and comedy create connections. Absolutely true. I have a friend, Nir Eyal, who's a technologist, who once said to me that it's not a superpower unless it can be used for evil. So I'm curious in terms of comedy, when you think about this, and you do touch on this a little bit, it can bring people together, but it also separates people. And we see people sort of in the public sector who do that. But then the more powerful usage, I think, what you talk about, and certainly what we've all been interested in our careers, is how we can, there's a phrase that the shortest distance between two people is a laugh.
Oh, that's neat.
Oh, I like that.
Never heard that.
Yeah, I like that.
I like that.
The connective power of comedy.
I love it. They're giving you a round of applause, Kelly, for that line. Yeah.
So it's actually something that Keegan and I, we did a Milken conference panel about this 2 months ago, is that when Keegan and I started working together, and I've been writing for him for about 8 years now, I was very adamant if he was going to host a show, or whether it's a TV show like the Brain Games kind of show or Game On, or if it's hosting the NFL Honors, go Lions. If it's hosting, you know, an award show or presenting an award show, and everything that he says is to bring joy, comes from excitement. I'm like, guys, we're doing a show about football. Keegan loves football. There's so much we can talk about. He can make fun of himself. He can make fun of the fact that he's a Lions fan, although right now it's getting better. He can make fun of himself, but we don't make fun of him, and we don't make fun of anyone else unless they're in on it, or they're included, or they're part of it. Thank you. It is, and Keegan will attest to it, we'll be, for a while, we were like on Zoom calls, and it would be like me and five male writers, and I'm the head writer, and I was like, guys, we're not doing that joke. We're not doing this joke, and we're not doing this joke. I want to make sure that everything is uplifting or connecting. And we did a really funny joke with Rob Gronkowski, with Gronk, at the NFL Honors 2 years ago. And so I wrote this bit where basically some writers pitched some jokes, but Keegan is singing a song and he's going through, and I kind of made a little family circus cartoon of where Keegan goes and who he sings with. And then he gets to a point where he says something like, or the guy that came back to play with his best, who retired, but he came back to play with his bestest buddy, and he's supposed to just say, we're back. That everyone else has been singing the song, we're back, we're back, we're back. He gets to Gronk, and Gronk just kind of smiles and nods, and Keegan stops the music, stops the show, stops everything. Hey, that's you, buddy, Gronk, that's you. Oh, my bad, Keegan. Well, you want to be part of the song? And Gronk's like, sure, what do I do? He says, well, I'm gonna sing, and at the end, I'm gonna, all you have to do is say Gronk when I cue you, all right? So then, you know, Keegan does this rap. It's really cute. He's like, you know, this whole thing, it's the whole rap is about Rob Gronkowski. And then I literally wrote the last line as, and when I drive, I like to honk. I'm sitting right here, and my name is, and then he goes, Rob.
So, I...
It's the opening of the NFL Honors 2 years ago. It's super fun. So I said, look, this is and I rehearsed with Rob. I called Rob. I said it's okay. And I said, these are my thoughts on this, Rob. You can either say Gronk, and Keegan's going to be so excited that you got it right, or you could say Rob, and I even gave him trigger fingers.
Yeah.
I was like as if he got it. And he says, Rob. And he's like, no, it's funnier if I say Rob. Yeah. Rob Gronkowski says, it's funnier if I say Rob.
Yeah.
He's brilliant, he's perfect, and he hits it out of the park. And he's in on the joke.
Yeah.
He's in on it. Now, someone watching it might think, oh, wow. But he was in on the whole thing, and that's what he wanted. And I really feel like everybody here laughed. Everybody laughed at the show. Rob looks good. He looks like a great sport. The whole thing works out. And then I actually had Keegan say, that works too. 3, 4, and gets the band back in and, you know, that whole bit. And it was like, it was lovely because we didn't make fun of Rob. We called Rob and said, hey, do a bit with us. What do you say? Right?
Yeah.
But I fight for that every day. I fight for that. It's not easy. It's not easy.
Can you define bit?
Can I define bit? Within a comedy structure, whether it's like a joke that she just told about the little boy, or it's in a sketch, a bit is always the moment that you understand the game of a scene or the game of what's happening right now. So like, we're probably gonna, a bit is every time we go to this gentleman right here in the Detroit Lions jersey. That's gonna be a bit. Like, trust me, we're gonna talk about him at least 6 more times during this evening. It's that go-to moment, that moment, and the reason that you laugh is because it's something that we all share now. We're all in on it here together. He's happy. He's got his jersey on. We're 3-1, and everything's everything's new in the world. Dogs and cats living together. The Detroit Lions are good. So every time we mention the Detroit Lions, there's going to be some titter or giggle because we're all in on it. We all know that this is something that's happened tonight. It's ethereal, right? It will never happen again. It will never happen that he's sitting in that seat, that he said, go Lions, that we're all together. So the bit, that's the bit of that particular, or I should say, that is the bit. And it's difficult to describe, but what happens when we're on stage... Or actually, I'll use an example. You know, remember we were talking yesterday about, or 2 days ago, about Nichols and May. Mm-hmm. And there's an old Nichols and May sketch.
Nichols and Mike May, Nichols.
Mike Nichols and Elaine May, who were a comedy team. Yes. Well, Chicago, and certainly a lot of Chicagoans know Nichols and May. And there's a sketch where they're playing, where Nichols is a doctor and May's the nurse. And they're in the operating room, and the doctor goes.
Okay, I'll do the.
Okay, the doctor goes. You ready?
It's pretty easy. It's pretty easy. It's not a lot of lines. It's okay, go. Oh, now you gotta imagine too. This is not a visual performance. This is a. Everyone, just close your eyes. It's like a reggae. No, it's I'm teasing.
Everybody
it's like on the record. It's like a record. You put on a record of these sketches, which is amazing.
And so they start off by Nichols saying. Gauze.
Gauze, doctor.
Thank you. Gauze.
Gauze, doctor.
Gauze.
Here's the gauze.
Gauze, please.
There's no more gauze, doctor.
There's no more gauze.
No, there's no more gauze.
It's Penske, isn't it?
So what, the nurse is dating a different doctor, and that's the whole, like, that's the bit. I don't know the next line.
That's okay.
I'm just going to explain. But the bit is that for gauze, he's like, it's because of Penske.
There's two bits. There's what? Two bits. The other bit, of course, is that I could say gauze probably 15 times in a row. And you guys would keep on laughing, and then that thing where someone does something and it's funny, and then it becomes unfunny, and then it becomes funny again, and then it becomes unfunny, and then it's funny again. It depending on how many times you do it. It's like Will Ferrell in The Shed. Get off the shed! Get off the shed!
You guys know that one?
Messing up. Get down off the shed! Are you on the? Get off the shed! And he could just keep on saying, "Get off the shed," ad infinitum, and we keep laughing, and that's the kernel of what a bit is. Yeah.
One of my favorite stories out of this was Neil Flynn, who is an alum of the Second City. You might know him. He was the janitor on Scrubs, and he was in the middle. Also, an actor who performed Steppenwolf.
Yes.
And he was at Steppenwolf, and he was. Talking to the late Martha Leahy, who was the artistic director, and he was saying, "Yeah, well, when I did my one man Guys and Dolls, and he was mentioning the shows he was doing, and then Martha stops and goes, "Oh, is that one of your lies?
Is that one of your lies?"
Yeah. And he goes, "We call them myths. They're lies, I guess."
And bits comes from Bits comes from Konstantin Stanislavski, the acting teacher from the 1800s and the early 1900s. It comes from him because he used to talk about the Stanislavski system or the method, and he would talk about these different beats, the beats that come in the midst of a scene, you'd have different beats. And what he was actually saying, it's funny, Stanislavski was saying bits. You're going to do this bit, and then you're going to do this bit. But because he was Russian, he was saying, and they're going to do this beat. And then we move on to this beat. And then the character will move to this beat. And that's where we get the phrase beats from in acting, is that Stanislavski
had an accent.
I
believe that. Is that one of those things where you go, is that true? Is it? Which statement is true?
It sounds good, right?
Yeah. It sounds true. I once heard.
Yes.
Just in case someone's like writing it. Keegan Michael Key said it was. I believe it. It sounds good. I like that
it's
one.
It's a good sounding story.
I like that story. I've never heard that story actually.
Yeah.
And by the way, that was a fantastic Russian accent. He does a lot of accents. And if you haven't heard the podcast, The History of Sketch Comedy, when I pitched the idea, I said, we're not getting any footage. Do you know this? We don't have any clips. We don't have any footage. We have no licensing. I said, Keegan's just going to do every voice from every single sketch. And Keegan was like, what was your...
I was like, I'm sorry, what was that? I'm doing what now? Yeah.
But he killed it.
The audience pre-submitted some questions.
Yes.
I'm pretty excited about it. So Susie Hall asks, does El Campo funny jokes, but Keegan Michael just repeats them and says them louder?
Where are you? Where are you? You're my best friend. Where are you?
And in parentheses, what my husband always does to me.
Right.
A double burn.
Keegan's my favorite actor. And as a director, I've had the privilege of working with a lot of fantastic people and a lot of not so fantastic people. And if I could pick someone to put in a project, it would be him. So I've been very lucky. Part of the reason why I like him so much is that because I do write for him. So if I write something and he says it on camera and hits it out of the park, it's a joy. It's a pleasure. And he usually does. So it's pretty easy. Aw, look at the way he's like,
sweet.
Don't look at me. But when we're on set on a commercial and I'm not directing, now I'm in trouble because I'm going to say it again. I'm not directing and I'm there as a consultant or doing some writing notes or some copy stuff. I will text him sometimes and be like, hey, hit this word the next time you say that line. You know, and then
it's stealth directing.
Stealth. This is the circle of trust in here, right?
It's just us, guys. It's just us.
But
yeah.
Because part of it though, but the biggest reason why is because I know what he can do. And I write anything that I've ever written for him is to lift him up and make him shine in the most Keegan-y, Michael Key way he could shine.
Thank you, honey.
You're welcome. So, but he does let me. I mean, look, even here, he's like, "L, you tell that, right? Tell a joke.
Tell a joke. You want to tell another joke? Do you want to hear? Of course, you want to hear another joke. These are the best jokes. This is. Will you tell my favorite joke?
Which is your
my
which
favorite
joke? The
joke.
Short one.
The short one. Yeah.
Okay. Only because it's short. This is a short joke. So back to the. The nice Jewish girl from New York thing. I was like, you don't know. There's how many jokes start like there's an old couple, there's an old thing, like those jokes. And so when I started telling Keegan these jokes, I was like, oh my God, my family's going to lose their damn minds when they meet you. Because they're like, he knows nothing. He knows none of these jokes. Boy, I got jokes. So sometimes we even call my dad and we'll hear a joke. Keegan will lose his mind. I'll call my dad and I'll just give my dad the punchline and my dad will tell the whole joke. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And he's 82, and he's like, I got this one. I know this one out. Okay, so that's a lot of setup for two lines. That's the most. He's like, all right. So this old lady, she yells downstairs to her husband, and she says, Morty, why don't you come upstairs and make love to me? And he says, fine, but I can't do both. And thank you for any of you who have heard this joke before and not say anything. The only Jew in the room. Thank you. I know there's more. She was the first. She was the quick one. I was like, yes. Thank you.
So you were talking about the people you saw at Catskills and one of the people who climbed and ended up becoming a second city along, Dave Steinberg as well. I'm curious, when did you first hear of Second City?
I guess because I was in New York, and in New York City, I think Upright Citizens Brigade had a pretty good following there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And I did go on a path where I thought if you wanted to make movies or TV shows that you acted, because as a kid, that's what you see. You see the actors. You don't see the directors or the cameras. Or I always joke sometimes, if you turn the camera around, you'd be shocked at what was going on behind all of that chaos just to see one person in a room. And so I think along the way, I did go to some shows. So somewhere along the way, I probably had learned about people at SNL. And you say, okay, well, where did they... What was their path, right? What was Gilda Radner's path, or what was their path? And then you go Second City in Chicago, or they go school, and you go, we don't have any money, I'm not going anywhere. So what's here? Is there something closer? And they'd be like, oh, you can go to, you know, maybe it was at UCB and see a show. But I spent a lot of time working in theater so that I could see theater.
Sure.
So I was one of those kids who, out of college, there was a theater company in New York that doesn't really exist anymore. It's called Naked Angels, and it was Matthew Broderick, Sarah Jessica Parker, Marissa Tomei. And someone had mentioned this, and they said, boy, if I could go back and do it again, I'd find a theater company like Naked Angels. And
really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
And then at the end, what?
No, I'm just
you know that? Okay. So when I was finishing up my senior year of college, they said I would do anything. I'd sweep floors, clean bathrooms, stuff envelopes, whatever you could do. So a couple weeks before I graduated, I said, hi, my name is Elle, and I'm graduating from Syracuse, and I'm directing a 3-camera live television show at school right now, which happened to be a comedy show, like a TV sketch comedy show. And I want to come and help and volunteer. And they were like, great, can you come on Tuesday? And I was like, I can stuff envelopes. And then I started reading stage directions and stage managing and running lights, sound. I was like, whatever I can do, I'm going to be there, waiting tables at night, co-checking at a gay bar on the Upper East Side, whatever I could do so I could be at the theater during the day and do whatever I could.
I think this is important thing for people here, too, because I got my shirt as a digital artist in the city in 1988. So...
Yeah. No, for me, everything happened in school, for me mostly, because when I was in school, the small little Catholic university that I went to, the University of Detroit, was a theater in the community that I grew up in, where people... The shows got reviewed. It wasn't just kind of an insulated university experience. It was one of the theaters in the town, if that makes any sense. So people spent a lot of time reviewing the shows there, and we ran our theater department like a theater company. And so for me, it was staying up till 3 o'clock in the morning and hanging lights and then doing carpentry and coming home, taking a shower and coming right back at like 6 a.m. to finish up. And it was bliss. Every moment of it was bliss. Because I got to, just like Elle, got to be around theater. That's all that was important to me. And if I couldn't be in the plays like Elle, I wanted to watch the plays. So I would volunteer to be the light board operator or volunteer to be the guy who was patching the lights backstage. And just anything to be in the sphere of theater.
My son Nick, who's just turned 26, he quit his corporate job in Chicago and just got an apprenticeship with Shakespeare Theater. And he told me the other day he got cast for Romeo and Juliet and he was cleaning the toilets.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
That seems about right.
King, you said something in the book that I really loved, and you said in the Second City, quote, there's always a parachute, and I learned that parachute was my imagination.
Yeah, it's did I say that? Yeah.
So,
to answer Susie's question.
So the book is Keegan's life, Keegan's journey, my interviews of Keegan, my understanding of Keegan, and some of it is my interpretation of Keegan. So
this is just a really long roundabout way of answering that woman's question.
So Keegan's voice, which I've kind of been writing for about 8 years, all of this stuff is, everything in this book is Keegan, history, and then some of my journey and my life. And I really felt very strongly, and this is the first room, again, this is the sanctuary here. I felt very strongly that the book has one voice. I thought that it should have one narrator, it should have one, tour guide, let's say, through the history. And Keegan's life and journey has all of these amazing places. He really did work in a Renaissance festival, he really was at Second City, he's the only, by the way, I don't know if you know this, he's the only alum from Mad TV to ever host Saturday Night Live. Yep. It's... Yeah, I think Lorne Michaels doesn't like to share with competition, so yeah. But anyhow, we love Lorne. But the thing is that so I took all of this information and kind of put a path together. And so there are places where I, let's say, put some, I don't know, what creative license to help tell the story. But it's all Keegan's story. It's not like I made up that he went to Second City. What happened? You were just about to say.
Nothing. I was just to say, you wrote the book, Al.
We wrote. But
he wrote stories.
He wrote stories. So what Keegan would do is Keegan would record. I would record him and interview him, and then I compiled everything. So I'm like the team of us is
yes,
the book.
No, yes, I agree.
It's. I mean, this book is. It's Keegan. It's all Keegan. Every page is Keegan. It's all you. This whole book is you. But sometimes I would, you know, add some flourish. It's the same story. I just went, huh, what, you said parachute, but, you know, and then what was your parachute? Like, sometimes I'd have to, like, okay, and then how do I, if I'm going to, I want to find a transition from, I mean, these are, welcome to our living room. I want to find a transition that takes you from here to there. How do you go from ancient Greece to, and you, when you read the book, you'll see it kind of follows. Each chapter has a history piece, a little bit of a lesson, a Keegan story that relates to something that we're talking about, and then something at the end called hey, you can't do that moment, which was inspired by Keegan watching sketches and going, you can't do that. That's ridiculous. That's so silly. And so I was like, wouldn't it be fun if we found something at the end of each chapter so that when you read it, you know you're coming to the end of the chapter, or you have some kind of pattern to follow. And so along the way, I'd say, okay, I need a transition from talking about ancient Greece to something in your life. What's a transition in your life? And if anyone's curious about the writing process of Keegan Key, and he would say, well, I grew up kind of near Greek town. And I'm like, no, that'll work. That'll work. I think that works because it's silly and it's funny to say, you know, we're going to take you from the history of ancient Greece to my history. Well, I'm not far from Greek town, and I was a chariot ride away from the Parthenon, which is a diner, right? Is a restaurant?
A diner. Yep.
Do you know the Parthenon?
You know the Parthenon?
No. No. He doesn't know the Parthenon.
You don't know the Parthenon.
It's in Detroit, and he's like, I'm just alive.
What's that?
We got a Parthenon in Madison.
Oh, in Madison? Yeah. Wisconsin?
Yes, sir.
Okay, wait a minute.
He got nervous.
Wait a minute. You're in Chicago. You're a Detroit Lions fan, but you're from Madison, Wisconsin.
Where's Patty?
He just went, yep.
Patty, there's Patty. Patty, are you from, you're from Detroit, Patty, right? Okay, we got a Detroiter. Do you know the Parthenon, Patty? Okay, good.
Yes.
Do they have good moussaka?
They have very good moussaka at
good
the Parthenon.
Good moussaka, okay.
Do you remember, Patty? Good pastizio, good moussaka. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Wait, what'd you say?
The first Greek restaurant I was ever at.
Aww. The Parthenon, first Greek restaurant you ever at. All right.
Okay, good.
That's my friend, Patty. I've been friends with
they
Patty.
They went to, like, elementary school together. Like,
I went to, yeah, I've been friends with Patty for, what, 47 years?
So that was kind of the, I know this is a long roundabout way for that first question, but that was kind of the process. Is I was like, How do I?
You might
go on tangents. Nobody got that. No one else has gotten any of this. No one else has gotten this. This is information.
We saved all of this for Chicago.
This is secret information. Right? Secret. You have a question? Okay. We're ready.
Oh no, feeling ageist towards herself. That's horrible. I think it sounds maybe corny, but just remember that you are enough. That's the thing that's really important to remember, is that you are enough. Elle, what did you say? We were talking about this earlier today, and you mentioned something to the effect of how much it took for you to get here. What was
meaning
it,
like how many people had to meet and fall in love and marry and have kids and have grandkids? And you know, there's memes like that out there about, you could say it 14,000 people created you, like all these people in your past that had to come together to do all these things to get you. So if you're here, you're special, and if you're here, you're enough. And we were 44 when we met.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
that's something. Yeah. I think we were like 43 or 44 when mm-hmm. we met, and I sometimes I tell people I was 47 when I got married, and I was like, people, but in New York City, that's like, hey, slow down there, right? That's like. Most of my friends are single, and they're like, I'm 54, I'm getting ready, I'm thinking about it. I think Amy Schumer does a whole bit about that. You're 35. Slow your roll there. What's going on? But things happen when they're supposed to happen, and everything happens in the time it's supposed to happen.
And also, there's an actor at
Second
City ETC
right now who did her career when she's in her voice. That's fantastic.
No,
that's rare. That's
Brian Gallagher. Someone came in a little bit older.
Brian was older. Yep. Mm-hmm.
There's another advice question. Jose Abad asks, this question is for both of you. What has been your biggest roadblock in life? How did you overcome it? If you could go back in time and give your younger self advice regarding this roadblock, what would it be?
Interesting. Yeah. It's funny because we as far as I'm concerned, we just mentioned it, which is there are those times where I don't feel like I am enough. And what I end up doing is I start, instead of living my life as my true self, I start to tap dance for the world.
Or make up stories.
Or I make up stories that are not true. You make up that are not true about myself. Do you know what I mean? That you make up stories about yourself and you start to kind of weave this narrative that's not helpful to you. And if I could go back and talk to my younger self, I would say, knock that off. You know, like don't tell those. What good is telling the story doing you? What would be helpful right now? You telling yourself that you're not enough, or you telling yourself that you can do it? And it sounds so simple and kind of rudimentary, but that's the big roadblock for me, is that I make up these stories that this is going to happen and that's going to happen, and what you're doing is you're preparing yourself for the worst as opposed to planning for the best. And that's what I would do if I had
when we first became friends. It was a conversation we had back then about I think one day I said to him, he was like ending, Key and Peele was ending, and he was trying to figure out what to do next. And I said, and I know there's some Tony Robbins version out there of this, so forgive me, but it was, if you didn't have any stories standing in your way, what would you do? If you didn't make up stories. Now, granted, we're all creative, so it's like, God, this is all I do is make up stories. But the stories that stand in your way, what would you do? If you didn't have any stories that you told yourself about why you couldn't have something, what would you do? What would you do?
Yeah, and that was difficult. It was really, really difficult for me because I was just like, well, what do you, no, but I can't do X, Y, and Z. She goes, no. If there were no stories, if there were no stories in your way, what would you do? And I go, no, but there, no. If there were no stories in your way,
I would want
what
to do this, but
do?
Immediately he'd say a story about why he can't. Well, okay, I would want to do that, but I can't because, like, just can there be a little space between what you want and your story about why you can't have it, and make that space bigger and bigger and bigger, and maybe never even say the other part.
That's right. Yeah, that's a good one.
And that's about being fiercely present in the moment, which is a great way to live. So we're all comedy nerds. What I want to do is talk about, like, who in the book you talk about a lot of great comedy. And so I remember the Music Box here did a Marx Brothers retrospective, and I took my kids. And the minute Harpo came on the screen,
mm-hmm.
everything changed.
Oh, really?
Never seen it. They love yourself or to shows or people, comedians that you want this audience to know about?
Maybe
contemporary or past?
There is a comedy team that we mention in the book called Bob and Ray. Ray Goulding and Bob Elliott. That's good. And Bob Elliott is actually the comedian Chris Elliott's father. Yeah, and he and his partner Ray Goulding, some of the funniest spoken word comedy that you've ever heard, and they rival Nichols and May in a way. But there's this that's somebody that I think that people should really know more about.
My dad Orlander was on WGN Radio for years. He started at radio in Boston when he was going to Emerson College, and he used to line up to go into the studio. A small studio had about 10 people for the radio show.
For the radio show.
Yeah, Emerson College.
Did he really?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
So one of the things that Bob and Ray did is on their show, they would do these characters or bits that sound like real interviews, like a real interview, and you it takes you a while to realize that they're not real interviews. Like they sound, it's like so real. So they did a bit with a guy who's interviewing someone who's in town, and he's in town for a convention. And do you want to? We'll do a couple lines. We'll do it until people fall asleep. Okay.
Right.
So you want to ask a question? You'd be
yes,
the,
okay. Yes. So, ladies and gentlemen,
we've never done this in public, so this will be interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
We're both kind of familiar with it. Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a gentleman with us here today who is part of an organization that is having their yearly convention here at the convention center, and sir, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us what you're here to...
I don't know what his name is. Excuse me one second. What's his
name?
okay, he just gave me a fake name. Anyway. Okay.
Would you like to introduce yourself and tell the people out there at home what you're here for?
My name is Wally P. Grumman.
And Wally, can you tell everybody home exactly what organization you belong to?
I am a member of the Slow Talkers of America.
Slow Talkers of America, right? And what exactly is happening here at the? So you've come to the convention, and what is it? What is it that your organization is all about? The Slow Talkers of America.
Our organization is here at the
convention center.
Convention center. We believe that words and phrases should
be speaking slowly. Should be speaking slowly.
Be spoken slowly.
There we go. And so,
but it's so great because whenever he says "slow talkers of America," he starts going "America, America." America, and every time they go through another round, you could see he gets angrier and angrier, and he's trying, and he tries to cut him off, and then he says, "Our 500
members
and 4 members," you know, like he's going, "Members, members."
People have been talking clearly the last like 25 years that everyone has a short attention span now.
Right.
I don't think that's true.
Right, right. I know.
I just don't see. I mean, you know, long form podcasts and those kinds of bits, and you lay them out in the book, the audition for the show. There's just so many things that are like, no, we're going on this journey. And so we only have a couple of minutes left.
But we did break the book up into lots of sections. There's pictures, there's interviews. It's like there's a lot to keep it busy. So that it's not 300 pages of words.
No. And you also have a lot of sort of famous comedic voices who share their stories and their ideas. There was one, actually I wrote down one I'd love to actually, this was really cool, I thought. It was Dr. Ken. Ken Jeong, who was in the community and is a panelist for The Masked Singer, and he writes, when you do an improv scene in comedy, you're trying to find the truth of the scene. It's the same thing in medicine. He was a doctor. When you're diagnosing a patient, working with a patient long term, you'll keep using diagnostics, keep thinking, and keep educationally improvising until you get to the truth.
Yeah, it's really great.
Saving lives.
Mm-hmm.
Comedy does that too.
Yeah, I think comedy saves lives.
I think Jim Carrey, who we spoke to, who's in the book, Jim Carrey talks about in general this how comedy has helped save him, and so did talking about comedy saved you. Alan Arkin, but we didn't interview Alan Arkin. No, in the book.
In the book.
Yes.
Tracy Morgan.
Tracy Morgan. And Tracy Morgan, you said that comedy helped save his life. Watching Key & Peele, he was in an accident, and it's pretty bad, and he was in a coma. And this is fun stuff. This is funny. And he said that he would watch Key & Peele and watch stuff that really helped him, you know. And he has a really, really good sense of humor about it. And when Keegan and I got him on the phone, and I was like, okay, Tracy, I have these questions, and I'm trying to kind of figure out the mental math of who's going to go in what chapter, and I'm going to try to maybe ask questions. Like, these are the three or four chapters I think you might fit in, and where do you go? And so I said to Tracy, I said, you know, is there a... will you be Tracy for a second? He does a good Tracy. It's pretty good. Is there like a, you know, there's a lot of movies, we talk about movies that feel like they have sketches. There's some movies that are made of sketches and some movies that have sketches in them. Is there a movie that influenced you that is a sketch movie or a movie that has sketches?
Blazing Saddles.
Okay. So is there, so if there's a way for you to answer the question, somehow using the question, because I've worked on a lot of documentaries, and you don't want to be, there are different ways of doing it, but I don't want to be in it. So I'm like, okay, if you can find a way to say the answer again, but like maybe elaborate a little bit about what you mean or what it was about Blazing Saddles that you liked, okay?
Richard Pryor!
Okay. Maybe I should tell you what my goal is to try to get like a paragraph. Like we're trying to get like a paragraph or two that we can then put in the.
They was farting in them scenes. You know, seeing you and Uncle when they were eating them beans and they was farting. That's a sketch.
Keegan once said to him, he said, oh, I met this guy. He said he went to high school with you. Do you remember this guy? And what did Tracy say?
You told Tracy,
oh, like, some
I said,
guy
I met this guy
me.
That I met this guy that you went to high school with. And he was like, hey, man, listen, Key, I got hit by a truck, man.
I was in a coma. I don't remember everybody I went to high school with.
He might be my favorite interview because it was like, you didn't know what was going to, and I was like, wait, what is, okay, first, now you got to explain, what is, does anyone know, do you know the Richard Pryor Blazing Saddles connection? Do you know there's a connection?
Was he a writer on that?
Yes. Yeah, he was a writer on it. Yeah, yeah. And the, my understanding is that he was originally supposed to play the role that Cleavon Little played. Yeah, and
the studio didn't want him.
Right. Yeah, and Mel also said the studio didn't want him. Also, first of all, and Mel also at that time he was having lots of difficulties with drugs at that time as well. And
not
so
Mel.
Not Mel, but Richard.
Mel Brooks. Yeah.
You knew Mel Brooks, drug addict. Yes.
Finally, it can be said.
Finally, it needed to
By
be
the way,
said.
Mel. So it's not in the book, but Mel Brooks did tell me a joke. So I told him the kid smoking joke, and of course he thought that was cute. And he said, "Oh, I never heard that. Didn't see that coming. Didn't know that." But this is not a joke that I usually tell. But it happens to be the joke that Mel Brooks told us in the interview last year is. So forgive me. This is not in the usual rotation. But the joke is, a guy goes into a store, goes into a deli, he goes up the counter, and he orders like a bagel or something. And while the food's getting ready, he sees behind the deli guy, there's like a shelf, and it's just boxes and boxes and boxes of salt. And then above that, there's another shelf with boxes and boxes and boxes of salt. And above that, another shelf, boxes of salt. So I said to the guy, Do you use a lot of salt? He's like, no, we don't really use a lot of salt. He says, oh, do you sell a lot of salt? He's like, no, I don't sell a lot of salt. He's got a lot of boxes of salt. You don't sell the box of salt? He says, no, I am terrible. I'm terrible at selling salt. He says, but the guy who comes in here and sells me the salt.
Getting the SN is produced by Second City Works and WGN Radio. Our editor is Iridian Fierro from WGN. We get support at the Second City from Colleen Fahey, Mike Farinaccio, and Emma Smith. The music you hear at the beginning and end of the show is by Jukebox the Ghost. For more information about the Second City, you can go to www.secondcity.com or you can email us directly at works@secondcity.com.
survive.